Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Zero Emissions Corsa E with a range of up to 337 kilometres, it's simply electric. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Grandland X plug-in petrol hybrid, now available at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Leaving Cert students are to get access to their class rankings from next Monday. This is despite objections to this from the teachers' unions and concerns about how the information will be presented to the students. The Minister for Education, Norma Foley, joins me on the line now. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Claire.
So you had decided, yourself and the department, you agreed with the unions that this was a bad idea to give students where they ranked in their class. And now you've reversed on that decision. Why?
No, that's actually not accurate, Claire. I suppose in the first instance, just to say to you that the calculated grades process was an agreed process. It was first mooted by students, supported by parents, and following engagement with teachers, principals and managerial bodies, it was an absolutely agreed process. And as part of that agreed process, it was understood that on completion of the calculated grades process, it was accepted by all that students would receive three pieces of information. That would be the percentage mark provided by the school, the rank order, and the calculated grades.
Was that not only on appeal, though, that you would get your rank?
No, not at all. They were the three pieces of information that were to be made available. And up to this point, the students have received the percentage mark and they have received the calculated grade.
Yeah, the unions tell us that their members had a clear understanding that this information, the ranking information, would only be revealed to students under an appeals process or a data application request.
Well, I suppose the important thing to clarify is that everyone has agreed that this information belongs to the student. The student is entitled to that information. There may be, a disagreement around the process of how the students will access that. But the view is that students have accessed all of their information via the portal up to this point. And if students were required to have a subject data access request, that would take a considerable amount of time. And I do believe, look, the students have been through enough at this point. If they want the information, it should be made available via the portal. And if they don't want the information, they don't have to access the portal. It is entirely up to the students. And many students will want the information and others will not. But there is a clear understanding on everyone's part that this is information that belongs to the students and the students should have it.
It could be very upsetting, though, for people. I mean, it could be a very brutal morning. When the rankings are out, the WhatsApp messages start flying. I mean, what have you done to protect the student who's at the bottom of the class and all of his classmates know that?
Well, you see, here's the thing, that each student will only have access to their own rank order. And again, I want to say to you, for us not to make that information available would mean we were not being faithful to the agreed process that was, if you like, countersigned by everyone when they actually agreed to it in the first place, including students and parents and the school community. So what I would be asking is that if students want to access their own information, they will be free to do that via the portal. They will not see any other students' information.
But you know how this will work. I'm in a rural school. My teacher has put me at the bottom of the class or close to the bottom of the class. My parents know the teacher. They see them going in and out of the local supermarket and they have a go at them. I mean, it puts teachers and students in a really tricky position.
Well, I suppose, look, I have worked for many, many years myself in the education sector, and I know that the entire calculated grades process was an extremely difficult process for everyone. And indeed, it was a huge, huge ask for the teachers in particular to become involved in it. And I absolutely want to acknowledge the determination and the goodwill of teachers to do the best for their students, and so they engaged in the calculated grades process. And they did that with many of them having principled objections to it, but they absolutely wanted to ensure that their students would have a leaving certificate. And nothing about the process has been easy. And I would continue to acknowledge that, but there is an understanding. If this was the agreed process at the very outset, well, then we must fulfil that agreed process and we must allow students access to what is, at the end of the day, their own information.
And it's a legal requirement that they get that information. Is that your advice?
It is their own information.
Minister, we spoke to the ASTI earlier this week about this upcoming ballot for strike action, action up to and including strike action. They tell us that many teachers, they just don't feel safe in their schools. What are you going to do to try and avoid what may happen at the end of this ballot, that schools could close as a result?
Well, again, I would like to say in the first instance, just phenomenal work has gone on throughout the schools communities, throughout the length and breadth of this country. And I absolutely acknowledge that. And I think there's a huge debt of gratitude owed to the school communities on the ground. But I would also like to say that everything that is happening in our schools, the entire roadmap, if you like, to reopening our schools has been absolutely underpinned by the public health advice available to us. Every step of the way, we have followed the public health advice as it has been made available to us. And that's advice that has been influenced by the World Health Organization, the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control, and indeed our own public health authorities. So everything that is in and an operation in our schools is on the basis of all that has been advised to us by public health. And indeed, I want to acknowledge as well that all of the unions and indeed all of the partners in education from the very beginning absolutely wanted everything that was happening in our schools to be led by public health advice.
But it's very difficult, isn't it?
You're
asking a teacher where there has been a confirmed case to go back into that classroom and teach. Now, I don't think any other workplace is asking people to do that when there's a confirmed case and they are in contact with that child or person or individual or work colleague for hours on end during the day.
Well, I want to be very clear about this, Claire. I am absolutely, nor indeed is the Department of Education requiring any teacher to do anything of that sort. Anything that would happen in terms of a confirmed case within the school and the processes that will be followed are on the basis of the advice that will be made available by public health. I am not a health professional. I wouldn't expect anyone in the teaching community or in the school community to be a public health expert. So we allow public health to make that adjudication. And public health do come into the school. They do an analysis of, you know, the contact and tracing and all of that. And on the basis of their expert advice, the school proceeds as the school is asked to proceed.
Yeah, but the teachers are asking, are there special rules for teachers? Because the ASTI said that up to 30 teachers last week, they got a notification on their COVID app saying you have been a close contact of a positive COVID case. Then they were told there was something wrong with the app and they were told just to carry on working.
Well, again, Claire, I would say to you that all cases of action are determined by public health and not by the app. And that would be the same in every workforce. That's not just within a school environment. That would be everywhere. And so following the incident in a school, public health came. They made an analysis, a forensic analysis of what needed to be done. They instructed the school, and then that's what was done. And I would expect that would be the same and is the same, I know, in every other workplace. So we will be determined by public health and their best advice to us. And, you know, that's what's happening everywhere.
We're not stretching public health advice in order to keep schools open.
Absolutely not. Every single thing that's happening in the school is underpinned by public health advice. And when they ask us to amend or to change, or because I acknowledge myself that the nature of COVID-19 is, I suppose, really in a constant state of flux. And the more we go along, the more we learn. And so at any stage where we have been asked to change practices or to amend what we have in our roadmap, we have done that. We will always work hand in hand with public health. We want schools to remain open, but we want schools to remain open safely. I, as I've said earlier to you, I have worked in that environment. I want the entire school community to be safe, and by that I include everybody that works in the school and indeed the children who attend the schools.
And do you accept that teachers are, in some instances, nervous, worried and scared going to work?
Well, I would accept, Claire, that all of us are in, you know, I suppose in our day-to-day, as we experience living with COVID-19 or journeying with COVID-19, there is an absolute nervousness and cautiousness, if you like, attached to each one of us as we go about our daily lives. But I can assure you that everything we are required to do, everything that we need to do in terms of our schools is being done. And indeed, I'd have to reiterate that our acting CMO, Professor Philip Nolan, and all the experts have actually said that our schools are essentially very, very safe places.
So the ASTI fears, as expressed to me on this programme, they're just not founded then. They have nothing to worry about because you're abiding by all of the public health rules in schools.
Well, I am saying, because I want to say it honestly, that it is understandable that everybody would have a degree of fear and would have a degree of anxiousness. I think each one of us, irrespective of where we work and how we are living today, we all share that fear. I have a fear every day as well. We're all very conscious of the people that we live with. We're conscious of our work practices. We are doing our level best every day to adhere to the public health advice, to do better every day, and now perhaps more than ever before, okay, as we see that the cases are rising. Parents to be assured, I want the school communities to be assured that all that we are being asked to do in terms of public health, we are doing in our schools. And again, to reiterate, we have been told by the experts that our schools are safe places, largely to the terrific work that is ongoing by the school community to ensure that that is so.
Okay, I want to talk to you about another story we were discussing on the programme a little earlier. Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty was talking to us about the hiring of the 10 new special advisers for the junior ministers and also the TD's pay hike. Now, I know that ministers and the Taoiseach have said they're not going to accept that pay rise. Do you think that all TDs should do the same? And is it the right time to be hiring those 10 additional special advisers?
Well, look, I would accept that I think really no time in the world in which we are living today is the right time. But I would acknowledge that we need expertise. These junior ministers, and again, there are 17 of them, but only 10 of them are actually receiving the support of a special advisor. And that's due largely to the complexity of their roles, to their budgetary responsibilities, for the need for very specific expertise in the areas in which they work. And that they would be areas, I think, that people would acknowledge that must be areas of high priority for us. For example, areas of working with older people, areas of mental health, European affairs as we face Brexit, the disability sector.
Okay, so that's justified in your view. The across-the-board pay hike for TDs then?
Well, that is, as I'm sure the point has been made to you, that is part of the 2% pay hike across the public service. And as you've actually said, the ministers are not accepting that. And indeed, the ministers have taken a 10% pay cut. But that's, you know, an independent analysis of the 2%, and that's across all of the public sector.
Would you like to see other TDs in the Dáil not take that pay rise?
Well, I think that's a matter for the TDs themselves, but I do think, to be fair, that I must say that it is independently analysed, and it is across all of the public sector. But what people will do on an individual basis is a matter for people on an individual basis.
And then all of this is happening in the context of the cuts to the pandemic unemployment payment. Do you think the government should seriously look now, given that people cannot go back to work, particularly in Dublin in the hospitality sector, should look at restoring that to the 350?
Well, I think unquestionably the pandemic unemployment payment has proven to be a hugely effective tool during COVID-19. And it has absolutely ensured that hundreds of thousands of people have had their incomes secured or cushioned, if you like, after losing their unemployment. But I must say as well that up to this point, 3.5 billion has been paid out under PUP. And, you know, that's to hundreds, as I said, and thousands of people. And it is, without doubt, the single biggest state intervention underpinning incomes. And I suppose another thing to put it in context, it's double the expenditure on job seekers allowance for 2019, and it's more than what the department has paid in child benefit for the whole of last year. Notwithstanding all of that, it is hugely, hugely important that PUP payment is there. People are suffering hugely, and I know there are certain sectors, as you have said yourself, that are particularly suffering at this point in time. And indeed, as we look into the future, will continue to suffer. So I would agree, as has been suggested by the Taoiseach, that there will be a review in the context of the budget of all COVID-related expenditure. And I think that's right, and I think that's proper, and you know, that's happening in the next number of weeks.
Minister Norma Foley, thank you for joining us on the programme.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Treat yourself to a little you time and get out there. It's time to drop everything and pick the path less travelled in County Kildare. Trek along the banks of the Grand Canal. Trot over to the Irish National Stud and Japanese Gardens. Or unleash your inner Downton at Castletown House. With so many magnificent experiences to choose from, Ireland's ancient East has never felt bigger. Make a break for it at discoverireland.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Guidelines for primary education, says a listener, are too weak to offer safety for pupils and teachers. Class sizes are too big to achieve meaningful social distancing, and children are not mandated to wear PPE. Even if a teacher wears a mask, they spend 5.5 hours with their pupils, up to 34 in some cases, who are not wearing masks. If there is COVID in the community, which there is, then there is COVID in the schools. The guidelines in schools do not offer the safety needed to safeguard pupils and staff for where we are at with COVID. I'm not sure if that listener is a teacher or not, but that's a very strong view. TDs are not going back into the Dáil, but teachers have to put ourselves at risk every day. That certainly is from a teacher. 51551 is the text number. Let's go to the newsroom now and to Brian Jennings.